We're looking at methane emissions here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The EPA says methane is the second most prevalent greenhouse gas emitted in our country, largely due to our activities, our choices, the first one being carbon dioxide. The United Nations published a report recently calling for urgent steps to reduce methane emissions this decade to address our warming planet. Why do you think methane emissions are rising? How should this issue be addressed here in Wisconsin and across the world? What is your outlook for whether humans can limit greenhouse gas emissions to stabilize the effects of climate change? Are you optimistic, pessimistic, a mix of both? 800-642-1234. Judith Rosentreter is a postdoctoral research fellow at Yale University School of the Environment. She was lead author on a study on methane emissions published last month in the journal Nature Geoscience. Judith, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, methane is a powerful greenhouse gas. Can you explain how it is emitted?
So methane is a really important, we say the second most important greenhouse gas after carbon dioxide. And it's emitted through several different pathways. So first of all, we talk about natural methane emissions and anthropogenic methane sources. So we distinguish between them. Natural sources usually are considered wetlands, but also other land sources, such as from freshwaters or from animals, wildfires, permafrost, oceanic sources. And when we talk about anthropogenic methane sources, we usually mean agriculture and waste, rice cultivation, but also emissions come from fossil fuel, from the coal mining industry, oil and gas industry, transportation, biomass burning, biomass fueling. So there's a whole lot of different sectors that can emit methane.
So a lot of different inputs here. What did your research find?
Right. So as I say, they compare or distinguish between anthropogenic and natural methane sources. And in our approach, we were basically looking at aquatic ecosystems and how much aquatic ecosystems, several different types of ecosystems, contribute as a total to global methane, right? Mm-hmm. And so some of these aquatic systems have been considered in previous global methane budgets, but no one's actually looked at the combined sources of methane from aquatic systems.
And these are human-made aquatic environments, is that right?
Well, we did look at, we looked at a whole variation of different aquatic ecosystems. So we combine natural aquatic systems, impacted aquatic systems, and human-made aquatic systems. I can give you for example, aquaculture ponds, rice cultivation, which is basically flooded rice fields. These are, or reservoirs, these sorts are man-made aquatic ecosystems. And then we have a lot of natural aquatic systems, wetlands, a lot of coastal wetlands. We've looked at salt marshes, for example, or mangroves, seagrasses, but also lakes and natural rivers and streams. But, these days, a lot of these systems aren't really natural anymore. A lot of them are really impacted or polluted. And so we're trying to account and compare also natural and impacted systems in our study.
Okay, so these water systems, they're impacted by us, whether it's ag runoff, fertilizers, other issues, or actually making the water body itself for, say, rice production or cranberry bogs. What impact does this have on methane emissions?
Well, we do find that it has quite a lot of impact. We found like there's a strong increase of methane emissions from impacted coastal wetlands or estuaries or rivers compared to really more pristine or natural systems. So it's a huge impact.
Yeah. We're talking with researcher Judith Rosentreter of Yale University School of the Environment as we look at methane emissions and what it means in aquatic environments. You can join in with your questions about methane, 800-642-1234. Judith, I'm wondering how you feel about the new UN report that says, look, we need to be more aggressive about reducing methane emissions to ward off the effects of climate change, to keep global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. What do you make of that report?
Yes, I very much agree. We have to be, I guess, methane is a very powerful greenhouse gas. And we say that it's, you know, the greenhouse gas is carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide. They're warming the atmosphere, and the potential of methane is 35 to 86 times more powerful than carbon dioxide. And furthermore, you have the lifetime of methane, so that the time that is it's persistent in our atmosphere is much shorter than carbon dioxide. So any sort of emissions and reductions are very effective of methane. And, you know, we've been talking a lot of CO2, obviously the most pressing question, but methane has a strong increase in our atmosphere since the industrial era. And we have to definitely reduce emissions.
Yeah, methane, as you said, has a much shorter lifespan in the atmosphere, about a dozen years or so. What bearing does that have on climate change?
Well, it has, it basically, you can see it also as a potential. So reducing any methane emissions from the atmosphere means that the effect is on a shorter time scale is much more.
Yeah. We're talking about methane. Let's bring in Tim now in Pembine. Tim, hi. What is your question?
Yeah. Some things on how to save the problem with runoff and our oxygen imbalance, the carbon dioxide imbalance, which we have right now. The reason we have a carbon dioxide imbalance is because we have more carbon dioxide, more methane gas. Carbon dioxide, I believe, is just combination gases. But so the methane gas, one of the most important you're talking about here, creates from is mostly created from your farm industry with your livestock animals. In your fields, you literally have no earthworms. Your earthworms are the creators of aerobic bacteria. Aerobic bacteria create oxygen on this planet from the ground. And you got your microbes in the sea that create oxygen. So when these farms that have no earthworms in their soil, all they have is methane production. They have no oxygen production. That's what creates the imbalance. So in order to fix the problem, you have to reverse everything what you're doing, your whole farming practice. You have to farmers have to raise earthworms so they can put the worm castings out on the fields. And there's your fertilizer. You don't have to worry about using any other fertilizer. That will be the best fertilizer you can use. Everybody's finding it out, and you won't have any more methane gas production. You'll be making oxygen production.
Tim, thanks. Let's get Judith here to respond. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's right. You have methane production and methane oxidation, how we call it. It's like when the bacteria take up the methane, and this is usually in the presence of oxygen. So in terms of aquatic systems, but this also, so for example, a lot of soils are a sink of methane because they have, there's oxygen available. So the methane that is produced is in deeper layers of the soil. So usually in the anoxic or oxic-free part of the soil. And so this is very prominent in aquatic ecosystems, as you can imagine. Anything water overlaying soils are reduced and have a stronger anoxic more anoxic sediments, and so therefore produce a lot of methane. And so one way is to think about methane is, I mean, a lot of that is natural, right? But sometimes we have fertilizers or yeah, a lot of runoff, like you were saying, this is washed into rivers or lakes, and it can really enhance the methane production in the way that a lot of algae blooms sometimes are induced, you know, or and they die and they slowly sink onto the bottom, and they're degraded in the soils to methane.
Yale University postdoctoral research associate Judith Rosentreter explaining aquatic methane emissions, why we should zero in on human-made aquatic environments. Do you live near a marsh, a pond, a lake? Is it human-made? What's its current condition? Are you a rice farmer, or do you have questions about how rice cultivation affects the environment? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we look at a new study on methane emissions from a team of researchers around the world led by Yale University. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The study revealed just how much we humans have impacted methane emissions from aquatic sources. The scientists found they've underestimated this global methane emitter, undercounting human-created aquatic ecosystems like flooded ag land, like ponds, wetlands, and marshes. Are you a cranberry grower? What do you think about methane emissions in the draining and flooding of your cranberry bog? What about rice harvests? What questions do you have about rice cultivation and methane emissions? Join in at 800-642-1234. Judith Rosentreter of Yale University was lead author on the study, and she's with us for the hour. Judith, where in the world did you study these emissions among inland ocean and coastal ecosystems and specifically the aquatic environments that you looked at?
So this is a global study. So we tried to gather as much data as we had globally, so have a global picture of us, what is going on of aquatic emissions. But of course, there's for some aquatic ecosystems, we have more information and more data, and for others, we don't. And there's also some aquatic systems that are more present or prevalent in the subtropics or in the tropics, and some are more in northern hemispheres. So it is basically the most recent update of aquatic methane emissions on the data that we have available globally.
Yeah, what do you make of scientists really undercounting the impact of these aquatic systems and their contribution of methane emissions?
So I guess the undercounting comes from, again, a lack of data, and also that they haven't been considered much in previous global methane budgets, although we have to say they have been accounted for. They just haven't been acknowledged as large emitters, especially when they are polluted or impacted.
How are humans contributing to the issues of methane emissions in marshes and lakes specifically?
In marshes and lakes, so in marshes, maybe I should mention that freshwater ecosystems have much higher methane emissions naturally than coastal emissions, and that is because the salinity, the higher the salinity or the saline the waters are, the less methane is produced. So this is naturally what we see all over the world. So generally, you find the highest emission in freshwater lakes and freshwater wetlands. Wetlands are considered the highest natural methane source globally. A lot of emphasis has been on natural wetlands. But we also find that methane can be emitted from coastal marshes, coastal wetlands, coastal mangroves. This is due to several factors. It's like they're very dynamic ecosystems. So they're in constant exchange with rivers and oceans. There's a lot of methane that is produced in those anoxic sediments that can reach the atmosphere and the water. But it's also the exchange with groundwater and like pore water that is that can have high amounts of concentrations of methane.
Let's bring in James now in Galesville. Hi, James. What would you like to add?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my question. I guess I kind of thought of a second part to this question while I was waiting. So one, I was wondering, you know, what is the human, like the agricultural impact methane emissions compared to just natural global emissions? And then obviously these are pretty complex issues, but are there any NGOs or what sort of groups are proposing policy to combat the agricultural related methane emissions, at least in the United States? So that's all I was wondering. Thank you.
James, thank you.
Thank you so much. Unfortunately, I cannot comment much on the United States because I've just recently moved here. I apologize. Mm-hmm. I cannot. But in terms of your question with agriculture and also, so one of the main things, I think I've mentioned that before, that nutrients and what you have in fertilizers, right, which is added to soils, they will ultimately be washed into our waterways, right? So into rivers. And there they can have what we call an eutrophication effect. So they can really create large algae blooms, but they can also change the whole chemistry, the water chemistry of a river or a lake. And so this can often induce a lot of organic, like algae, or which is ultimately organic matter, which eventually will die and slowly sink to the bottom of a water system, where it will decompose and fuel methane emission. So basically, the methane bacteria, or we call them archaea, they like high temperatures. They need oxygen free, so there's no oxygen around in the soils, and they need organic material to produce the methane. So if you fuel this, you will have an increased methane emission.
Yeah, so giving them the right composition, you can really increase your emissions. Talking right. with Judith Rosentreter, who is a postdoc researcher at the Yale School of the Environment, where she studies aquatic ecosystems and methane emissions around the globe. Taking your questions on methane emissions at 800-642-1234. Judith, you mentioned that rice farming releases more methane per year than the entire open ocean. How does rice growing produce methane gas?
Yeah, thank you. We are not the first one who found that. This was definitely known before our study. We just put this in a different context. I want to just mention this. Rice cultivation is the known and important methane source. And it is, again, the same principle. Rice farms are flooded wetlands, basically. And so when they are flooded, so when the water is sitting all over the soils, that produces a really favored environment or conditions for the methane bacterium. So that is why they have hot spots for methane production.
What can you do to counter that? Because rice is eaten around the world.
You're right. This is it's a big issue, and we are aware of this. And of course, rice is eaten around the world. And what can help is having periods of water drainage. So what I mentioned before, in the presence of oxygen, we have also the uptake. So oxygen, methane. Oxygen bacteria, they can also take up the methane, which means that these are important states. So if the rice cultivation, the rice farmers can change between their flooding periods and their non-flooded periods, where they basically take a break of methane production, that would be helpful.
I'm thinking also about our cranberry growers and draining and flooding of your cranberry bogs. Is that in the same situation here?
Again, I'm not very aware. I'm sorry about cranberry bogs and what exactly the farming management is. But I assume it is because the principle is the same. The more water, during the flooded periods, you have a lot of methane production. During the non-flooded, you would have a lot of methane oxidation, which is the methane uptake. So the more you can change between those two, the better.
Yale University researcher fellow Judith Rosentreter explaining the growth of methane emissions in our atmosphere and what aquatic ecosystems have to do with it. Do you think we should invest in methane capture technology, or is it more important to stop using fossil fuels? What questions do you have about what the researchers have concluded in this study? What puzzles you about methane emissions? Be part of this hour, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Judith Rosentreter after a news update on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent as we explore methane emissions and specifically human-made aquatic environments. A new report from the UN says reducing methane gas is imperative for tackling climate change in the near term over the next 25 years and curbing the extreme weather that's hitting people all over the world. A new study from 14 scientists around the world found as much as half of global methane emissions come from aquatic ecosystems made by us. What questions do you have about emissions from wetlands heating up and what egg ponds have to do with this? How can we slow our warming planet? Join in 800-642-1234. We have postdoctoral research fellow Judith Rosentreter of Yale University, who was lead author on the study, and she stays with us. John is joining us from Richland Center. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Methane is a good source of fuel. Our next generation of engineers, it'll give them some work to do to capture it with the right wind and the equipment. Renewable energy is a very good thing to do. Plus, we can eat the rice.
All right, John, thank you. So John's saying there, methane emissions, a good source of fuel in the long run.
Yes, I guess that's right. I mean, if we talk about a reduction of methane in the atmosphere, which is our ultimate goal, right? We're thinking about, there's a reduction of methane as methane emissions from the oil and gas industry. There's a lot of leakage in pipes. This is something we have to tackle. But there's also negative emission technologies, right? That trying to actively capture atmospheric greenhouse gases.
What impact, Judith, do emissions have from oil and gas fields?
Oh, they have a huge impact. So we know that we've been talking about half of global methane emissions come from aquatic ecosystems. But the other half is more or less anthropogenic, which really comes back to the oil and gas industry, methane emissions from coal mining. A lot of this is related to extraction of methane from deeper soils, but also leakage and fugitive emissions during transportation from pipes, etc. So there's a huge potential, and I think this is something we've been talking about. The biggest potential that we have to reduce emission lays in our anthropogenic emissions. What we find in aquatic ecosystems, a lot of that is a natural process, right, which has always been there. You can also say a lot of this is a background methane source. So the point of our study is to show really that this can be, however, really increased if we continue to pollute and impact our waterways, our natural waterways.
Yeah, if you say this is a background methane source, how can we use the information in your study to stop rising methane concentrations? You know, what are the solutions you see here?
Well, there's a few. Again, it is about limiting runoff from agriculture fields, any sort of fertilizer that adds in our healthy waterways. Is something we can certainly work to limit more in the future. But there's also a lot of potential in what we talked about earlier in having different stages between flooding and non-flooding in rice cultivation. We have a very high amount of methane emissions per area from aquatic aquaculture ponds. And so we see that I don't know if you've ever done this, but I can recommend you that if you use Google Earth and you zoom into some areas, some coastal areas, especially around Asian countries, you see a huge amount of aquatic aquaculture ponds. So this is farming for shrimp, for fish, for crabs. And so they add a lot of nutrients into their ponds to grow the fish, but they also have a lot of anoxic stages, so they produce a lot of methane. And so, you know, the conversion back to more natural habitats will certainly be helpful, especially on the coast. So a lot of aquaculture ponds or a lot of marshes, coastal wetlands, mangroves,
farm-raised fish, what you're talking about here in these aquaculture ponds, also contributing to this issue, and really, as you're saying, trying to limit that to affect methane emissions.
Yes, I think this is something we've really tried to point out in our study too. It's been aware that the aquaculture pond emits a lot of aquaculture farming emits a lot of methane. It has been a little bit undercounted for, I think, globally. So we find that the methane production from aquaculture pond is more than from the entire open ocean. And if you put that in context, you know, like we have a blue planet. So there's a lot of ocean, and the coastal farming is an issue that we need to address. And I think this can be really changed with the right management and right management choices.
We had a caller who couldn't stay with us and wants to know, if we can't lose the methane gas that is being emitted, can we learn to use it more of it faster? Is there a way we can kind of eat it up?
I believe so. I think, we've been talking a lot about, again, negative emission technologies that capture carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, for example, actively sucking carbon dioxide out of the air, or enhancing carbon sequestration in soils, et cetera, et cetera. So there's several ideas and solutions. And I believe that now that methane becomes more and more a topic, and people aware of the potential of methane contributing to global climate change and global warming, that there will be that we hear more about also actively removing methane from the atmosphere. Although it's not exactly my field of expertise, so.
No, that's
I'm
okay.
Limited to comment on this.
That's okay. We're talking with Judith Rosentreter, who's a researcher at Yale University School of the Environment. She's explaining the growth of methane emissions from human-made aquatic sources, as well as naturally made from oceans, lakes, and other bodies of water, as she explains the background sources of methane. You can join in with your questions about methane emissions and what questions you have for the research findings. 800-642-1234. Judith, data from NOAA show that in 2020, last year, there was a surge in atmospheric methane. How much growth are we seeing compared to past decades, and how would you interpret that data?
So just going back a little bit in time, since the Industrial Revolution, basically we have a strong rise of methane in our atmosphere. And then for a while, we had between 2000, 2006, something we call a stabilization period, where our atmospheric methane didn't increase by much. And so since 2006, we have been seeing a really strong increase again in methane in our atmosphere. And in particular, the last year, we've seen a strong methane growth rate compared to previous years. There has been some discussion around what the potential or what the reason and causation of that might be. I have to again say that these usually come out every April. So the new update from the last year, so this was released this April, about 2020. And so there's been some discussion around this, but I think it is a little bit unclear and still a lot of discussion around where this comes from. I think it is likely, but again, I cannot comment on this, that this is a fact. I think it's likely that we see some sort of climate feedbacks. So basically, if we think about wetlands, freshwater wetlands, and so I don't know if I mentioned before, but temperature, so the warmer the temperatures, obviously there's a limit, but the warmer the temperatures, that really enhances also methane productions. So the warmer, so it's basically, it can be a climate feedback, that the warming also induces more methane productions, for example, from wetlands, but it is not yet clear whether this is related to natural or anthropogenic sources.
Do you find that there is a debate among scientists about what this increase, what is really behind this increase?
Yes, there has been a lot of debate around this, especially, and we're still debating about the stabilization period, where we didn't see a lot of increase in between 2000 and 2007. And so there's some evidence that this might be related to natural sources or anthropogenic sources. It could be also related to the change of methane sinks in the atmosphere. So it's still a little bit of debate if it's one or the other or combination of factors.
Hmm. Jim from Watertown called, couldn't stay with us, and was commenting on fertilizer runoff contributing to the methane emissions problem. And Jim wants to know, what should we be doing about our watersheds?
It is about decreasing those fertilizer runoffs, so limiting these. That's the straight up answer.
Yeah.
We have to try to limit any sort of nutrient and fertilizer runoff to our waterways.
We are learning about methane emissions within aquatic ecosystems with Judith Rosentreter of Yale University School of the Environment. If we reduce methane emissions, do you think we can put a stop to the climate crisis? Why do you think methane emissions have kept rising and rising over the past 15 years or so? What can reverse this trend or stabilize it? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network.
Here's the Monday weather forecast from Wisconsin Public Radio. Clouds and sunshine today, highs in the upper 60s to upper 70s. And then looking ahead, a chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms over the next few days, starting in southern Wisconsin tomorrow, spreading north overnight, and then statewide on Wednesday and Thursday. Breezy conditions are forecast too, especially tomorrow and Wednesday, and high temperatures will be in the upper 60s to upper 70s.
Later today at 12:30 on Chapter a Day, Norman Gilliland reads from The Woman Who Stole Vermeer by Anthony M. Amore. Then at 1, it's On Point.
It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're with Yale University researcher fellow Judith Rosentreter. She's part of a team of researchers who recently published findings on the human impact of methane emissions coming from aquatic environments. Methane is emitted by natural sources like wetlands, lakes, and the oceans, but our human activities, they take a toll as we rely on fossil fuels and pile up rotting food waste in landfills and raise livestock for beef and dairy. And Judith Rosentreter is with us for 10 more minutes. John is with us from Madison. John, hi, go ahead.
Hi, I'm curious. I'm looking at the wheel here on Google, and it shows 21% of the methane emissions come from landfills, 25% comes from dairy manure, and 19% from dairy enteric. What is that? And I'm wondering why, how the landfills must be increasing as our population increases. Why can't they find a way to ship our waste to the moon or use the moon for something other than just going there? You know, use. Anyways, I'm curious about the enteric, what that is, and how 19% of the dairy enteric is part of the emissions. And I'll listen.
Yes. So thank you for the question. So this refers to basically a lot of animals, cattle, beef, goat, sheep, etc. All sorts of animals that eat grass or plants, and they have a stomach and a digestive systems where methane producing bacteria live. And so while they digest the food, they also produce a lot of methane. And as you may be aware, that there's a lot of beef in particular in the US, but also in India. So this has been globally a large methane source that we know of. And obviously this has also the potential to be reduced, you know.
Yeah, so dairy, certainly a source here. Landfills, also something John brought up. What is the impact with landfills?
Yes, landfills also a lot of methane production. It's in particular wastewater and any sort of runoff that contains a lot of organic matter or sewage, etc., can be a source of enhancing methane production in waterways.
Mike is joining us from Spring Green. Hi, Mike.
Hi, yeah. I've read a lot about the melting permafrost and warming oceans as a source of methane, and that, you know, it'll cause a tipping point, kind of runaway greenhouse effects once the permafrost and warm oceans start releasing methane. What does your guest think of that?
Yeah, thank you. This is a very pressing issue that we've been talking a lot about in the scientific community, but also publicly. It is related. It's also some sort of a climate feedback. So while the ice melts, especially in the northern parts of the countries, around the poles, and the ice melts over time, it sets free soils that have been usually covered and don't produce a lot of methane because of the low temperatures. But once they're exposed and the temperatures rise, this enhances a lot of methane production. So there's a lot of research going on around methane from permafrost melting. And there's a lot of active research, going on in this field, and we will most likely see a lot of increase of methane with the melting permafrost.
Yeah, so permafrost being a really active scientific area, what future research do you plan to do regarding methane emissions?
I actually work at Yale University at the moment for the next 2 years, and we're looking at also methane emissions on the Long Island Sound, which is the big bay around Connecticut and New York and the island. And so we're looking also at different kind of areas from near New York City, where we assume, you know, highly polluted waters versus the more the outer ocean. So we've been looking a little bit at this, but I also be working on some more methane emission studies in the Everglades in Florida in the next years from mangrove ecosystems. And I'm a coastal biogeochemist, so I mainly work in coastal ecosystems. And so this is my field of expertise. So there will be more research that in the future.
Yeah, what do you see in terms of methane emissions in the Everglades and in these mangrove forests?
Well, we see that so mangrove forests in general are also coastal wetlands, and they also are really influenced and affected by seawater and salinity. So they have been for a long time thought of not having any methane emissions, or very limited, or you know, that we don't need to account for. But we've recently found that methane can come, like a high methane concentrations can be found in these ecosystems. So we've been focused on this, in particular around the topic that so mangrove, salt marsh, and seagrass systems have also been highlighted as natural carbon sinks.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be capturing a lot of carbon through their uptake. The photosynthetic uptake, or any sort of plants that can take up CO2 through photosynthesis. But what is specific about coastal wetlands is that they have a lot of biomass, but they store a lot of carbon in their sediments. And if you've been ever to a mangrove forest, you see that's really muddy, thick soils. So are salt marshes and also seagrasses, which you see less because they're obviously most of the time underwater. But so they've been really highlighted at natural carbon sinks, which they are. But we've also recently found that they can emit methane more than we maybe previously thought. So we're working a lot about this because some of the methane has a potential to partially offset the carbon sequestration potential.
We're talking with Judith Rosentreter, who studies aquatic ecosystems and methane emissions around the world as a postdoctoral research associate at the Yale School of the Environment. Judith, last week, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, raised what's considered normal temperature. A 30-year average showed the temperature in 48 contiguous states just above 53 degrees. Do you think greenhouse gas emissions has contributed to the temperature revision from NOAA?
I do think so, but again, it's not much of my field of my expertise.
Yeah.
I also I prefer not to comment too much on this.
So if the outlook is we can understand methane emissions more, target it, the greatest contributors and really figure out how to tamp down emissions, could that have a significant impact on stabilizing the warming climate?
Yes, I think with methane, we have understanding more methane emissions and where the methane comes from also really helps us to use it to our advantage and reduce emissions. And again, I think I've mentioned this before, methane has a really powerful greenhouse gas with a global warming potential 34 to 86 times more than carbon dioxide. So any sort of reductions in methane have a strong effect, and we can really help reducing the global warming with looking at methane and methane production. And so our study was focused on aquatic ecosystems and really highlighting that impacted polluted waterways have much higher emissions than more natural. But I think the most potential of what we can do as humans to tackle climate change is really looking at anthropogenic sources, because as direct sources we can work on reducing them.
Judith, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Judith Rosentreter is a postdoctoral research fellow at Yale University's School of the Environment. We have a link to her study on methane emissions in the journal Nature Geoscience. It is at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.